coronavirus testing will continue in Jacksonville this weekend. The city and Vistar Credit Union start loaning out money to struggling businesses. And the new group, Masks for Jacks, is trying to get all of our faces covered to stop the spread of COVID. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of our top stories on our Friday roundtable. How are you doing out there? What are you struggling with? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later in the hour, in this time of takeout and delivery orders only, we'll see how one food business is pivoting to meet the new demand. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss the week that was, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union. Hi, Dan.
Hello there.
Good to have you. Ann Schindler of First Coast News is with us. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. And in studio with me, our own Sky LeBron of WJCT.
Hi, Melissa.
It's so good to have all of you. In particular, we are so grateful to have Dan Scanlon and Ann Schindler participating, since both of their news organizations have recently instituted furloughs as a way to cope with the downturn in ad revenue during this crisis. So it really says a lot that they are still willing to call into this show and inform the public, and we thank them for that. There's a lot to talk about this week as we track the local and state response to the pandemic. Here's the latest on the crisis around the state. The Florida Department of Health is now reporting 16,826 cases of COVID with 371 deaths. In Northeast Florida, there are 941 reported cases and 23 deaths. Also this week, a firefighter in Jacksonville tested positive for COVID-19, shutting down the city's largest fire station, number 28 on Hogan Road. All three shifts of firefighters and paramedics at that station are being asked to self-isolate. That's a few dozen people. Meanwhile, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says the COVID-19 testing at Lot J near TIAA Bankfield will continue this weekend. The Department of Health and Human Services had announced that they were going to end support, federal support for community-based coronavirus testing sites around the country, but there was a lot of criticism of that move. So now HHS says local authorities can choose whether they want to transition to running the testing themselves or continue with federal help. The mayor has said that the city of Jax is going to work with state officials to keep the Lot J testing site up and running. We will check with the city today to see if they will continue to accept federal help. And we'll go to your calls in a moment on all of this at 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax, and our Facebook page is open. Ann Schindler, let's begin with you. In a minute, we can talk about the testing situation, but first, the fact that 47 people have been sent home from the busiest fire station in the city is not comforting right now, and they're doing it to slow the spread of transmission. This is a reminder of how dangerous the situation is, and in particular for first responders who have no choice but to come into contact with people who might have the virus.
That's right. I was talking to their union chief yesterday, and he said, you know, really, it was just a matter of time, given the kind of work that they do and the number of calls that they're being sent on now that are related to the coronavirus. Of course, they don't know how this firefighter contracted the virus, whether it was work-related or not, but obviously all of his cross-contacts at work have to be quarantined. And they have another unit operating out of that fire station on Hogan Road. They also have a fire station from University and Beach Boulevard that's operating out of there as well. And so it's actually impacting, because that station is being remodeled, so it's actually impacting two different facilities. I think it's Station 20 on Huffingham Road. But it's a big footprint. You know, it's Southside Boulevard, it's Town Center, Beach Boulevard. Now, they say it's not going to impact their service at all. There won't be any noticeable change. But, you know, it's concerning, obviously, for anybody who's a first responder right now. And he said it's something that they think about every time they get up and put on their uniform.
Yeah. Dan Scanlon for police as well. Shootings continue apace in this city, despite the basic lockdown we're all under, the stay-at-home order. Police are still having to go out and do their jobs and respond to dangerous situations. Fires are still going to happen. It's just it's a reminder that These are dangerous jobs in any case, but now even more so.
Yes, well, Station 28 happens to be my fire station. Went by yesterday after the mayor and the chief talked about it. They had the fire units out back beginning the disinfecting process with them. I can tell you that any day or night I stand outside, I hear those engines running all the time. And they just added another station, temporary but soon to be permanent, up near town center. And even then, 28 is busy. As far as the cops are concerned, the sheriff and the mayor touched upon that yesterday. There is some element of possible cabin fever, increasing some domestic issues. The sheriff said that he's added 40 more people into a task force to try to get on the ground and out there to keep domestic issues from escalating any further. And yet we had a shooting overnight that was not a homicide. We had two teenagers, a girl and a boy, shot yesterday on the north side. And, of course, earlier this week, a seven-year-old girl lost her life again, being caught in the crossfire of a fight that turned into a shootout in front of a convenience store near Dunn Avenue.
Yeah. If only we paid as much attention to the ongoing drumbeat of that kind of violence as we are now to this pandemic. It's 549-2937 to join us. Sky LeBron, you know, let's also talk about the fact that the mayor says drive-up testing at Lot J by the football stadium will continue this weekend. He had worked to partner with the state on continuing this because the federal government had announced they were no longer going to fund the site past today. Now the Department of Health and Human Services is walking that right back, ostensibly because there was so much outcry about this. They say local authorities can now choose whether they want to transition to running the programs themselves or continue with federal oversight and help. The mayor says they will start adding an additional 150 tests at the site per day. So testing 400 people there a day and hoping for results within a week is the latest.
Yeah, I think this also stemmed from other areas of the country where the federal testing was the only option that they had. If that would have been eliminated, then they would just have no testing site in that location. One thing that I think is going to be interesting to look at as we progress through this is if the mayor's statement still applies about those 150 extra tests, if we're still taking the federal help. Is that still going to be available? Because that was coming from the state, from what I gathered from the mayor's meeting yesterday.
Yeah. And Schindler, they're doing this test right across the street from where you work. And every day there's a line of cars that you and I have been observing as we come into our workplaces. People line up every day to get the test. Other hospitals around town are offering the test. They are expanding testing into more neighborhoods around the city. The more people that we can test, the better, because the effort to roll out testing, of course, has been so slow and wasn't handled properly in the beginning.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I actually haven't been at that workplace for 3 weeks now because I've been working from home. But I've obviously seen a lot of footage from our tower camera and the lines each day. You know, it's interesting that when they are doing the transition now from the federal oversight to a more local a purview on that testing, that the testing numbers can go up. You know, they were capped at 250. That was a federal arrangement with their contractors. And so it actually frees up for more testing, which is kind of an interesting counter, you know, reality, I guess, to the transition. But I know some people that have had testing there, and certainly the time frame is really the key. You know, the friend of mine who was diagnosed with COVID-19 waited 2 weeks for results. And by the time he got them, he was essentially better. And, you know, when I was speaking to some first responders yesterday about their own testing, I mean, they're sidelined for about 10 days typically when they're waiting for tests, which is nerve-wracking, but it also takes them out of the workforce. And so, you know, trying to improve that turnaround time, is as well as getting more people tested, is the big focus now.
Absolutely. And then the next wave of this, Dan Scanlon, might be the antibody test that's being developed so that people who have had the illness can confirm that and confirm that they have antibodies. They can donate plasma to sick patients. They can be cleared to return to work if the test shows that they have at least some immunity to this virus.
Yeah, I just heard that on NPR. That is wonderful news. I hope it works. I hope it's able to get out there. And I hope some of the flattening of curves I'm seeing in some of the statistics and that the mayor is talking about are coming true. I really do.
Yeah, and Sky LeBron, the mayor discussed all of this at a webinar this week he conducted with the Jacksonville Chamber. He said, and I'm quoting, "Politics died when the COVID crisis hit."
Yeah, he touched on that at the mayor's press conference yesterday. He kind of talked about if the policies aren't helping my citizens right now, then I don't want to be a part of it. He's pretty much saying that this isn't a partisan issue right now, and it shouldn't be treated as such. But it's just interesting to see how this is all getting handled at the local level, because, I mean, at the state level, it could be so much different and different. Mm-hmm. There's definitely different perceptions of how the Governor DeSantis is handling this as well.
Yeah. And Schindler, mayors around the country like Lenny Curry have really had to step up and aggressively work to protect their local populations. Not every state is leading proactively. And there's been a lot of criticism of the federal response, of course. So mayors are on the front lines of this right now.
Yeah, and, you know, all that I've heard from people who know and have watched this mayor say that, you know, he really is at his best when he's in a crisis like this. And, I mean, you know, when he talks about politics being dead, I think we have to say he wasn't doing great politically. I mean, he had a lot of political battles before this, you know, and whether it was the JEA stuff or whatever, but he has been a really good communicator on this crisis. He has been, I think, forthright about what he's not getting and what he needs, and has really worked to be a leader for everybody. You saw that a little bit where he's been doing this direct address to children lately, which I think is really kind of nice, you know, and acknowledging, for instance, high school kids who are missing out on some really key events in their life. Yesterday, he had a couple student journalists on the call who he allowed to ask questions. And each day he kind of says, like, we're all in this together. His 7 p.m. phone call is kind of a thing for unity. And I know that he's been reaching out to people in the community across some lines that typically he wouldn't necessarily broach. So, you know, he has been, I think, a model, and he's been ahead of, you know, the governor, certainly, and the president in terms of calling for things to close, requiring people to socially distance, exhibiting it early on with the elbow bumps that he was doing when people on the national stage were still shaking hands and shoulder to shoulder. So he has been, I think, demonstrably, showing and kind of doing what he needed to do in this crisis. But obviously, he said this is not something, you know, you're not going to be able to stop a national health crisis locally. You can do what you can to, you know, flatten the curve, but this is, you know, you really do need, this is the economy is in a tailspin, and, you know, you can do what you can locally, but it is something
right
that requires.
And the lack of a unified federal strategy is making it tough for a mayor like Curry or any mayor to really do everything possible to protect people, although certainly, as you point out, he's done quite a bit. And Dan, during this webinar with the chamber, he also talked about potentially rolling back some regulations to get the city back on its feet. The city's also working with Vistar Credit Union on a new loan program for small businesses who are struggling to make payroll. And so on the economic front, local officials are moving quickly as well.
Well, he did state that obviously he was very happy about the fact that the Vistar program had started. He said he was going to ensure that you got your access to it within 3 to 5 days. Rolling back those regulations, that's something other governments have been talking about. Obviously, that would help if you're trying to get back on your feet. The one question I've heard is, what about the new businesses? You have to be a business that's been open at least a year to get access to this Vistar loan program. What if you're a brand new restaurant, which we used to go to before the coronavirus issue, and they're probably going to fail because they don't have enough time to fit the Vistar loan program?
That's right. Not everyone is qualified for that program, unfortunately, although we are all hopeful that it will help some businesses out there. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Dan Scanlon, Ann Schindler, Sky LeBron, and yours truly, and your calls. So how are you doing out there? How are you holding up? Health-wise, economically, what are your struggles? What are your concerns as we discuss the COVID crisis here on the show. It's 549-2937 to join us. Richard is in Orange Park. Hi, Richard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, my question is the weather is warming up and you can already feel the presence of the mosquitoes. What role will the mosquito play into this? If it bite an infected person, can it transfer it over? Are there studies on that?
Richard, I have no idea. I appreciate the question. It's our understanding the virus is not spread that way like other diseases. It's simply spread human to human through the transmission of droplets. When you cough or sneeze or even breathe, somebody can pick up the virus that way. But that brings me to the other big topic that we wanted to get into, an effort to get more face masks distributed around town to slow the spread of this disease. The group Masks for Jacks is working with the Jaguars and other groups to hand out masks with takeout orders at about 24 local restaurants. Now, ultimately, they hope to distribute 350,000 masks. There have been some glitches with the first run of these, but they're trying to work through that. And the idea is to get as many people covering their face when they go outside, Sky LeBron, particularly if you go somewhere where there'll be a lot of people, like a grocery store or a drugstore. Down in Miami, the mayor there last night issued an order that you have to wear a mask if you go outside. We don't have that here yet in Jacksonville, but that is one way to really get more people to comply with this. And in the next several weeks, it will be a lot easier to get one of these masks, is the idea.
Yeah, and that's something that I asked the mayor yesterday. Is this something that we could potentially see in Duval County? And so far he said no. He thinks that it should be voluntary right now, that everybody should. I mean, he had a post on Twitter a couple days ago where he had his own daughter making a homemade mask just to show how easy it can be. So I think he's just trying to push that idea that this is something we can all come together and make ourselves. If not, you can get it from a business. You get it from a partnership, and they're making them more readily available as we're seeing a shortage early on. And now it seems like a lot of other businesses are stepping up so that they can help fill that gap.
That's right. You know, Ann Schindler, the Centers for Disease Control, is now recommending that everyone wear a cloth face mask when we go outside. And so this is a reversal of what they were saying at the beginning of this outbreak, where they were not recommending that. So I think there's been a lot of confusion for people. And we've been kind of slow on the jump around the country to do this, and because we don't have that social norm that other Asian countries have of wearing a mask, say, when you're getting on a train or going on a crowded street. That's common in countries in Asia where they've been dealing with the horror of this virus. It's just not as common here. So we've had to get people used to the idea.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a hurdle. I mean, I was actually talking about that with my husband the other day. You sort of started wearing a mask in public now. And, you know, some people are, some people aren't. People feel a little weird about it. But I do think it's becoming normalized. I mean, even now, if you look at, you know, the television news programs, increasingly you see reporters, national news, local news, wearing masks as they're doing the reporting. And I think as it becomes a little bit more normalized, people maybe just kind of adopt it. I see people walking around my streets now all the time wearing masks, even if they're not near anybody. We're required now at our station to wear them around the station if for the people who are still working there. So I think it's becoming more the norm. And also you see sort of this Gen X DIY kind of like vibe about the mask. All of the people that I follow on Twitter are doing, you know, making masks of some kind on their own out of stuff that they've got around the house and providing it to other people in the workforce. So I do think it's becoming more the norm.
Yeah. If you go to the website masks4jacks.com, masks4jacks.com, you can learn about this. They're distributing 30,000 cloth masks to nearly 24 locally owned restaurants. With your takeout food order at these restaurants, you'll be given 2 cloth face masks. They are made by a local distributor. And then, Dan, over time, they hope to work with the Jaguars, the Duval County Public Schools, other entities to distribute. It could be up to 500,000 of these masks all over the city. It's late to the party. The health experts all say we should have been doing this weeks ago, but it's better than nothing. And it's true, as Anne said, I think people initially feel weird or awkward wearing them out in public. They feel, especially guys, I've gotten tweets from guys saying they feel self-conscious when they go into Publix wearing their mask. But they realize that it's something that has to be done. And so they're just doing it. And then they're tweeting or putting on Facebook pictures of themselves doing it to kind of normalize it a little more.
Look, you can make it a fashion statement. You can design it. You can make it look cool. I had to laugh when the mayor picked up his own daughters on his press conference this week. And it's this brightly colored mask. But don't forget, it's a reality. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti announced yesterday that businesses and stores now can refuse customers who are not wearing masks. So in California, this has become the real deal. If you don't wear a mask as a customer, as an employee in a public necessary business, you could face some kind of fines or, citations.
That's right. But we don't have that here in Florida, as we've been discussing.
No.
Our governor has come in for a fair bit of criticism for his response to this pandemic. Ann Schindler, Ron DeSantis held a press conference the other day where he tried to bring the state up to date on everything that's happening. And he also talked about the drug that's being used to treat some patients, Plaquenil. It's a controversial drug, but it is showing efficacy with some patients that are really sick with COVID. So I didn't put that into our rundown for today, but that is something else that people are talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he has, I think, struggled to find a balance between his allegiance with the president and kind of what the state has been, I think, wanting, which is a little bit more, leading on this issue instead of following. You know, the other day he was criticized because he was finally wearing a glove, but just one glove, and then he was sort of touching his face with the other hand a lot. Which is not anything to be criticized. I mean, I think it's difficult for anybody to kind of adapt to this new environment where you're supposed to not be touching your face and nobody can really stop touching their face.
Yeah.
But you know, he has, you know, from refusing to do the shutdown order, you know, the stay at home order, and as everybody else is doing it, kind of the hotspot state, he has been criticized for not being as aggressive as perhaps people have wanted or might have made a difference at an earlier stage. So, and I think it's hard for anybody that's trying to take their leadership at the federal level, because it has been a mixed message and it has been disorganized. And, you know, so you sort of have this lead from below where you have people who are mayors and in some states governors who are having to step out and take that first step. And really it opens them up to a lot of criticism from their constituents and from their businesses. You know, you look like a little town like St. Augustine, where the mayor had to say, we're going to cancel all the festivals. And without any directive from the state or the federal government, all of your businesses are saying, well, what do you, you know, you're going to kill us, you know. And so you have to take that burden. You have to take those body blows without anybody kind of offering you that protection. And that's hard at the local level.
Sure. It's hard to be the first out in front on this, even though over time, I think the people that have been more proactive will look smart. But yeah, in those initial days and weeks, it's very difficult. And it's 549-2937. If you need to ask a question or share your story about how you're dealing with the COVID crisis, give us a call. Dr. Samuel Oza is on the line. He's the creator of Masks for Jacks with Ascension St. Vincent's Riverside. He was on the show the other day. Hey, Dr. Oza, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. I just happened to be listening in and I heard you talking about masks and some of the other things regarding COVID-19. So I figured I'd give you guys a ring.
Yeah, please do bring us up to date on how the distribution of masks is going.
Sure. So our first round that we were going to do with about 20, 25 restaurants, we got the masks in. There were donated masks that we were just trying to get out, the first 5,000 quickly. And it wasn't really the quality that we wanted. They were single ply, and we didn't want to distribute those masks because we didn't think it provided adequate
protection. So you need 2 layers of cotton for it to have any protection at all?
Yeah. I mean, 1 layer can work. It's better than nothing, but we figure if we're giving these out, we wanted them to be durable so they're reusable and washable. So we have about 30,000 coming in on Tuesday, for which we're going to have a much larger distribution, over 50 restaurants. We're getting the whole list together right now. And restaurants that want to apply can come to our website, and there's a form now to fill out, and we can include you in the first distribution.
And you're working with the Jaguars, the Duval County Public Schools, other groups too. When do you plan to take this wider?
So probably later that week, later next week, we're going to have another 45 or 50,000 masks coming in. That's when we're going to start working with homeless shelters, Meals on Wheels, the Duval County Public Schools school lunch program. We're actually having a meeting later on this morning with all the key players, including Florida Blue, the Jaguars, and the city. And we're going to come up with a distribution plan because we are trying to get a lot of masks out in a short period of time. You mentioned, I think this, you know, we all wish this would have started earlier. I actually kind of started this effort about a week prior to the CDC's recommendations, and it was just very difficult to get people on board without the CDC changing their stance. So that's why we had to get this late a start, because it just took a while for the CDC to come around.
Right. And what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of different angles to it. There's obviously the culture in the United States. We don't wear masks. When you see somebody wearing masks, you assume that they're sick. It's not like Asia where, you know, it's a normal thing to wear masks during flu and cold season. So I think that was part of the pressure. I'm sure people weren't really excited to wear the masks. The other thing is, you know, the data is conflicting. They have studies that show that there is no benefit, and there's studies that show that there's significant benefit. And I think once they dove deeper into that data, they found if you actually educate the people properly on wearing a mask, you can actually see most data is pretty conclusive that it can help the spread. And then in this particular pandemic, we've seen in so many different countries that, you know, it does work. You know, South Korea, Japan, Czech Republic, those are all adjacent to countries that have had severe epidemics, and they were spared for the most part.
Yeah, in the Czech Republic, wasn't it made mandatory through the whole nation that you had to wear a mask when you went outside?
Yeah, it was almost a culture of mask shaming, that if you weren't wearing a mask, people would stare at you, because all the celebrities, the social media influencers, they really all got on board right away and really made that movement spread very quickly. And that's kind of our goal here on for Masks for Jacks is Masks for Jacks is that we want to make a cultural change here in Jacksonville.
Now, as we mentioned a minute ago, down in Miami, the mayor is making it compulsory to wear a mask when you leave your home. Do you think that should be done in Jacksonville?
I think it's difficult to make things mandatory when things aren't as severe as they are in Miami and in New York and in L.A. I think it is a good idea. I think businesses should be able to have the right to refuse customers that don't wear a mask, because you're basically potentially putting other customers at risk when you're not wearing a mask. So I'm in favor of you know, mandating masks. I think just given our culture here, it's a difficult thing to mandate these sorts of things. But I think if the business community kind of rallies around this, then there will be a kind of a mask-shaming attitude here in Jacksonville, where if you see somebody not wearing a mask, you kind of look at them and say, you know, what's your problem?
Right.
why aren't you trying to protect your community?
Well, I thank you so much for calling in and bringing us up to date on this. He's Dr. Samuel Oza, Ascension St. Vincent's in Riverside. The website is masks4jacks.com. Doctor, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Dan Scanlon, that gives you an idea of how hard the medical community is racing to try to meet this public health challenge in our community.
You know, a very good friend of mine is a very busy doctor up in Westchester County, New York, and is talking about how absolutely exhausted they all are with this. And then he shows what his masks look like after a day of use, and they're disgusting. I mean, it's obvious. And then yesterday, he even talked about the fact that they, too, at their hospital now have a refrigerated trailer to handle the bodies of the dead. It's just amazing that some parts of this country are in that bad a shape. But then again, you're talking New York with millions and millions of residents, far more than we have.
That's right. Miami, New York, as you mentioned, are hotspots. The fear is that we will have that level of misery. You know, and that is very, very worrisome. We don't have so many cases yet that our systems, our hospital systems are overwhelmed. But the peak has not happened yet in Florida. The latest models show that it could be coming later this month.
You know, I think that the whole mask thing really becomes a lot more obligatory and makes a lot more sense when people realize that the people they're protecting are the people that are protecting us. You know, when you realize that when you slow the spread, you make nurses and doctors safer, and they're the ones who are putting their lives at risk to, you know, keep people, sick people, and make them well. I mean, intubating people is, I think, one of the most infectious things that occurs in the hospital these days. It's the reinfection rate for people who are trying to do intubations of people who are, you know, dying of COVID is extraordinarily high, and it's really hard for them to stay free of the virus. So,
right.
You know, the more that people can stay out of those environments and, you know, protect the healthcare workers, it really is like a frontline protection wearing a mask, you know, wherever you go.
Yeah, you're doing it to protect other people more than yourself. That we just need to keep stressing that. Tracy in Mandarin. Go ahead, Tracy.
Good morning, good morning. You know, we don't want to make Florida or Jacksonville another New York where the hospitals are created in the tents. So putting a mask is not a big deal. I see so many patients. I put saran wrap around my face and cut a little hole. And my daughter is a radiation oncologist. She's making so many masks, jacks for masks. And I think maybe how should we reach our governor or whosoever should put this, please put a mask. There's nothing wrong. Protect the people who are in the store. Protect the doctors. They're working from 7 until 5 every day, putting their life at risk. So putting mask is not bad. And I put saran wrap on my face and then put a mask. How do I look? Don't care.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right? That's gone out the window for sure. Thank you, Tracy. We've got a caller at the beaches, doesn't want to give his name. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm just really curious as to how nobody's calling out these public officials for failing us by leaving golf courses open.
You know, we've gotten that question a lot. We're going to talk about that. Thank you.
Beaches to young, healthy people. But yet I'm sitting here seeing New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania license plates at public golf courses. The young people of the city are doing their part. I see a lot of other people, including our public officials, who are failing us.
Thanks for the call. Here's an email about that, too, from Judy. Why did the governor exempt in-person church services? Many churches are social distancing, but it seems the charismatic megachurches are still defiantly holding services this Easter Sunday. That could negate all the sacrifices so many of us are making. Okay, so whether it is church, golf, there are exemptions that are controversial, Sky, and people are upset about them.
Here's the way that I've kind of thought about it is when everything is closed, you know, I've gotten to the point where I get excited because I'm about to go to the grocery store and get a couple things.
That's really, that's the most exciting part of our day.
Yeah. So when you leave some of these things open, it's the same thing that Mayor Curry and we've seen other public officials say about the beaches. When you leave one option open, that's where everybody floods to because it's the thing that's exciting. It's the only place that you could go out and be in public. So when you go to the golf courses now, they might be more busy than they've been in a long time because there's just nothing else for people to do. The same thing on Easter Sunday with churches, by allowing them to stay open, there could be a possibility that some of these churches could be very packed because that is the only public appearance that some people are going to make in a few weeks.
Right. You know, Anne, in Tampa, a pastor was actually arrested for defying a local order and calling in his congregation. Then the governor essentially overruled that and said that you cannot prevent churches from meeting. There's a constitutional question there, not so much, though, for a golf course.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think there's any question that you can say that golf is essential. I know people like it. It's obviously not an essential service. And, you know, the fact that it's being deemed that, I think, is just kind of indefensible. I mean, golf courses will say we're sanitizing. That's great. They'll say it's socially distant on the golf course. Fine. But they're ignoring the reality, which is the more people that are out in the community, whether they have to get gas, whether they have to pay for their golf, with a cashier, whether they have to sit in a golf cart with another person, is exposing them to cross-contamination. And every person that's out in the community is one more person that isn't sheltering in place or staying at home, and they're increasing the risk for the entire community. So anybody that is golfing, I think, is being irresponsible. And I think golf courses that are open are being irresponsible. I just don't think that this is the time to be golfing. I can't think of an essential element of golfing.
Right. A lot of people agree. I'm being reminded, too, that apparently there is a provision in the Florida Constitution that allows churches to close in the event of danger to public safety. Let's go to Rebecca in Lakewood. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I wondered if your panelists had any insight into the news that the 32207 zip code, which is my zip code, has twice the infection rate as any other zip code. It's very worrisome.
Yes, that study was published the other day. Let's go to Dan and then Sky. Dan, people in San Marco, Lakewood, San Jose, that area, were very alarmed to see those numbers.
And again, the only possible reason for that would be that they are very densely packed neighborhoods, lots of communities, lots of stores, and there's a possibility, like San Marco Square, et cetera, people are still out shopping and it's getting transferred, or they could all be sheltering at home and somebody got exposed 2 weeks ago and it's gotten past that way.
Sky, you covered the study, the zip code study. It's the number one most viewed story on our website. And the data's, when you dig a little into the data, you find that these cases are coming not from people coming to the hospitals in that zip code, but from their address, right?
Yeah, this is coming from their address, and there is a lot of questions surrounding that. But the way that you could kind of look at it is there are some zip codes throughout Duval County that don't have these hospitals and facilities around, but you could still see positive cases. Right now, 32207 has 116 confirmed cases from the latest update. And then there's some other hotspots throughout Duval County. One of those hotspots was the beaches, and then a little bit more to the south side near Bay Meadows. These are just the places that a lot, like you said, a lot of people are packed in those areas, and there's just a lot going on there.
Hillary is in Jacksonville. Hillary, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I just had a quick question about the masks for everyone. I think it's a great idea, and I love what Masks for Jax is doing to get those masks out to the public. But my question is for the employees at the various private businesses throughout town. I've noticed when I've had to go grocery shopping or to the home improvement store here and there, most of the time the employees are not wearing masks. It's probably 50-50 right now. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's being mandated, or not mandated, but is that something that the employers are just trying to promote, or are masks being supplied to those employees also, either by their employers or by a charitable group like Masks for Jax? I think they need protection too.
They do. And as we've been discussing, it's not mandatory. It's up to the individual employer how they want to approach this. You know, Dan, we a couple of weeks ago on this show interviewed a Publix worker anonymously who said he had been told by Publix he could not wear personal protective equipment at work because it would scare the customers. And then after we interviewed him and then went back to Publix, and there was a lot of criticism of that, Publix changed their policy. They are now allowing workers at stores to wear masks and gloves, but only after public pressure was applied. So there really is no law or ordinance mandating how businesses protect their workers.
Correct. And what I've also been told, and now we're seeing it on Twitter, is that they've installed face shields at the cashier stands to prevent any transfer of spray from a cough or a sneeze. You have one-way lanes now in the stores in the public so that you do not meet someone face-to-face. So they're trying that social distancing better and better. And then we're hearing that some of the big box stores, when you can't go in to buy stuff anymore, you have to order. And then you wait outside and they bring it out to you. So it's slowly but surely happening, the social distancing. The mayor also this week twice has answered the question about reopening the beaches. He said, yes, I understand people love to walk on the beach, but we don't have enough cops to stop them from planting themselves on a towel and congregating. If they just strolled and kept distance, it'd be fine, but they're not going to. They're going to sit down, and that defeats the purpose of social distancing.
Let's go to Elaine and Jax. Elaine, go ahead.
Good morning. Just a different perspective. I understand that, and in fact, I saw a news account of a gentleman of color wearing a mask and being tailed by security. So just kind of a different perspective is that.
That's right.
We're all in this together, but, you know, just things to be mindful of.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Men of color in particular say they're worried about going into public places wearing masks because they're worried that people will perceive them as threatening. And so please be mindful of that and realize that if someone is wearing a mask, particularly if it's a male of color, that they are just trying to protect you. Okay, so before we go to break, I want to make note of a couple of other news and notes. This weekend, the ramps for the Hart Bridge in downtown Jacksonville are starting to come down. Listen to this. That's the sound of demolition. Here's one quick question for you, Anne. Those ramps are coming down to clear the way for development around the football stadium. With the economy we're dealing with, people are starting to wonder what the fate of that ShadCon development might even be.
Yeah, well, with good reason. I mean, it doesn't seem likely that a rebounding economy will put that development front and center. I mean, as rich as ShadCon maybe, I don't think that he's immune to the downturn. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of available land in Jacksonville right now. That's just one parcel, you know, kind of the beyond that ramp. But it does, I think, increasingly seem like a little bit of folly to tear down those perfectly good roads at a time when, you know, any future development that it might assist is more in question than ever.
Right. I want to make note, too, of two wonderful women who passed away this week. Sharon Siegel Cohen, executive producer at Channel 4, and Janet Owens, who led LISC Jacksonville, the Local Initiative Support Corporation. We were all very saddened to hear of their passing. Wanted to mention that. And I want to thank all of you, but in particular, Dan and Ann, who are dealing with furloughs, unpaid furloughs at their organizations. And quickly before we wrap, is there talk of unionizing at First Coast News?
Oh, not that I've heard. I mean, I think that this downturn affects everybody. And honestly, you know, what we've been asked to do is pretty little compared to what most people are facing right now in terms of the economic hardship. I mean, there's so many people that are straight up out of work right now, whose businesses are shut down. And I don't think that there's any sense that this is, unfair or unreasonable, to be quite honest.
Okay. Just wanted to ask, since I had heard some chatter about that, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Ann Schindler of First Coast News, Dan Scanlon of the Times Union, and Sky LeBron here with me at WJCT. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Be safe.
You too. Well, up next, how do you keep a catering business alive during a pandemic? A conversation with Chef's Garden of Jack's after this.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross addresses issues important to our Northeast Florida communities. Our firm is pleased to support WJCT's First Coast Connect.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Congaree and Penn offers an elevated farm setting for private events. With all-encompassing farm-to-table culinary service, the farm's acres are a unique backdrop for special occasions. More at congareeandpenn.com.
Baptist Health has advanced solutions for heart valve issues. Whether you have a leaky valve or you've been told you may be a candidate for TAVR, Watchman, or MitraClip, learn more about the Structural Heart Program at Baptist at baptiststructuralheart.com or 904-202-9500.
I'm Peter Sagal. We can't keep you from stress eating while stuck at home, but cooking guru Samin Nosrat can give you some classy things to say while doing it. Umami! Join us for this week's news quiz from NPR.
Saturday morning at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm John Dankosky. This week on Science Friday, how poet Jane Hirschfield channels science into art for what she calls unaccountable times.
How do you know that a scientific result is significant? You know it because you're thrilled.
The poetry of science and of cataclysm. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
We were told this week was going to be bad, and it has been.
The grief is increasing. Remember, every number is a human being behind that and a family.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll assess the political, the economic, and the personal toll on the country as the pandemic plays out. That's on the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, right now, the only way to eat out is to dine in. Restaurants are closed, except, of course, for those takeout and delivery orders. This has been incredibly tough on anyone who works in the food world. So how do you keep going, for example, if your core business involves catering events and bringing people together? Some local business owners and chefs are getting creative with solutions to keep food coming to customers in new ways. One of them is Jennifer Ernest of Chef's Garden Catering and Events here in Jacksonville. She's on the line. Hi, Jen.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
I'm well. It's good to talk to you. And I just love what you do at Chef's Garden. I was lucky enough to participate in a virtual cooking class you sponsored the other night.
Yes.
It's just one way that you're pivoting in this new situation we're all in so that you can keep your team working and also help the community. So when this first hit, what did you sit down and strategize?
So, things have happened so quickly that I don't always feel like there's been a whole lot of strategy. It's rolled out kind of quickly. We have Chef's Garden Catering Events, and we also manage the cafe inside the Kummer Museum. And so the Kummer Museum, along with other cultural institutions, closed quickly and we're very precautious. And so we quickly realized that our business was going to change. And so over that weekend, we just sort of started thinking, what are we going to do? And at first, we thought it was just going to be a couple of weeks that we were looking at, maybe a month. And my husband said, I think we should switch to meal delivery. And I kept seeing my friends posting, like, how are we going to see each other? How are we going to get together? We're going to have to do some FaceTime cocktail hours. And that's where it kind of dawned on me that we could do virtual cooking classes where we could bring everybody together through different apps and cook with everybody.
That's right. And the other night I was in a virtual cooking class with you and your husband and a bunch of other great people and made the most delicious coq au vin I think I've ever had. You delivered the ingredients right to my door. So all I had to do was take out the ingredients, call into the Zoom and cook along with you and everybody else. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's what, the delivery option has made a lot of sense for us because it helps keep people in the house, keeps people from going out more than necessary. It also gives, we have team members and we have vans, so it made perfect sense for us to be able to deliver things to doorsteps so that we didn't have to have any contact, but just to make the process nice and simple for everybody.
Now, you're also doing meal delivery, including for special occasions like Passover and Easter on Sunday. How is that going to work?
So it's been going really well. We've changed our whole website so that there's now an e-commerce section to it. So you can click right on our website, www.cateringjacksonville.com. And then you can either click on meal delivery or virtual cooking classes, and that will then take you to a page where for meal delivery, you'll see all the different food options. It changes weekly, so we'll be rolling out new options starting tomorrow, and then you can simply add things to your cart. The order's placed, you choose your delivery day and window, and we take care of it from there. The ingredients are delivered to people's doorsteps with heating instructions so that it can be enjoyed at their leisure. The food lasts 2 to 3 days in the refrigerator. The containers are also freezable. And we have batch cocktails and some basic grocery delivery as well.
Very nice. Now, you're also partnering up with Feeding Northeast Florida. How's that working?
So it's an amazing partnership, and I really have to thank John and Setta with Orsay, Bellwether, and Black Sheep, because it's my understanding that he and Susan King are the ones that came together. Susan King is the director of Feeding Northeast Florida, and they came up with this amazing collaboration that serves the elderly and homebound while also giving work to our industries, our employees. And so Feeding Northeast Florida actually hires restaurant employees. They cook out of our commercial kitchens, but they're paid as contractors by Feeding Northeast Florida. And that allows them to get a stable income. It allows us to keep our team intact so that, you know, they have something to count on. They're not looking for work outside of this. So when we come through this, we still have our team. And it also allows us to give something back. And the restaurants just provide their kitchen spaces. And then we get all the products from Feeding Northeast Florida as well.
And, of course, you are trying, like every other business, to keep people on your payroll as we get through this.
Right.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah. And it's, you know, with the number of people that we have, I mean, so many of the restaurant groups in town are larger. And there's a lot of smaller companies. But, you know, on the event side of things, our payroll goes up to 50 people depending on, depending on the season. And obviously, we don't have solutions right now for keeping everybody going just because we don't have a space that would allow us to safely employ that many people, first of all. But it's also a smaller, it's a smaller market right now. But
that's
it has
right.
at least allowed us
allowed you
to keep some of our people going.
That's right. So do your part to help with that effort. Go to cateringjacksonville.com. Cateringjacksonville.com. You can click on meal, alcohol, and grocery delivery, or you can click on virtual cooking classes and take advantage of the incredible offerings Jen has put together in such a short amount of time. Jen Ernest of Chef's Garden Catering and Events, thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And be safe. And thanks for listening, everybody. And make sure to tune in today at noon for our statewide show, The Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Keep calm, flatten the curve, wear a mask. See you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.